You are listening to the Huddle Up Podcast, part of the USA Today Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corey Bonini, and we're here to talk fantasy football for the 2018 NFL season. Welcome to week 8 of the fantasy football season. I'm once again joined by Ryan Bonini. We're here to talk fantasy lineups, strategy, advice, and talk about some of the most important news of the week. And there has been quite a bit of it. How are you today, Ryan?
I am doing fantastic, Corey. You know, I was 5-0 last week, so that makes it a very enjoyable week. And my teams are finally starting to turn into the teams I thought they were. So no complaints.
Well, then for once ever, I will recommend that everyone listening should take his advice over my advice, because I was absolutely not 5-0 last week. Last week was one of the rougher weeks I've had in recent memory.
Not the better Bonini this week, huh?
Holy mackerel, was it bad. I had a couple of really bad beats, and then I had a team that scored 61 points in PPR. That is just, like, you should just hang it up at that point. That's embarrassing.
Retire. It's about time. Retire.
Yeah, I know, huh? Some weeks you get those games or makes you at least ponder it, right?
61 points?
61 points. Bye weeks and just horrible
performances. Denver defense almost scored that many for me.
No kidding. Bye weeks and horrible performances. It was just awful. So speaking of awful, the Oakland Raiders returned for their bye week. Amari Cooper is no longer a Raider. He was traded to the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas is on bye this week, so Cooper gets back-to-back bye weeks. That's helpful, obviously, for him to learn the offense as quickly as possible, get a crash course, perhaps build some chemistry with Dak Prescott in the meantime. Where do you see him fitting in? Is this better for his fantasy value? I have a hard time believing it could be any worse than what he was dealing with in Oakland.
Meh. I keep going back and forth on this. Biggest question is which Cooper shows up, the one from his first two seasons or the one from the last season and a half? You named it. You know, he's going to need time. He's got to learn a playbook, got to build rapport with Prescott, going to gel systematically. It takes more than a few weeks to do that generally. Cooper is elite talent, but we haven't seen it in a long time. His hands are questionable. At best, moving forward, he's a wide receiver three or a flex until he shows otherwise.
But is he, though? You say he's elite talent. Is he, though? Players of the elite talent don't disappear for 22 straight games. They don't have constant injury problems. They don't drop everything thrown their way. They take over. They dominate. They overcome all of these shortcomings around them, and they prove that they are elite. I don't think Amari Cooper's even close to elite. I think we've been sold a bill of goods to believe that he's elite.
Maybe I'm hanging on to the past too much.
I don't think there's a past there. That's the thing. He had a good rookie season, and then he was okay in his second season. He's been an utter disaster since then.
He's got all the physical intangibles that you want.
Except for hands.
Catching
hands. The most important thing as a wide receiver is catching the football. Jerry Rice didn't run fast, jump high. He created separation through crisp route running, and he had elite hands.
You know what, though? Kind of tied to that, there's a big part of giving a damn. And I don't know if Cooper gives a damn.
If you played for the Raiders, would you?
The Raiders weren't that bad.
I kid, relax.
But
I'm saying that maybe going to Dallas and having a shot at the playoffs, perhaps that's enough to re-energize him. I wouldn't count on it. I don't think he's going to be even more than, say, 15 to 20% better statistically than he was on track to be as a Raider.
If anything, in the short term, this helps guys like Cole Beasley, opens more things up underneath, because you have to think that Cooper's going to at least try to be working the deeper intermediate type routes. And I think it helps the running game. I think it opens holes for Zeke because they're at least going to have to respect Cooper in the beginning if he continues to look like he has so far in Oakland this year and most of last year. Well, not so much. But as for Oakland, man, holy fire sale, Batman. Who's next?
John Gruden.
I make that payout on the 9 years remaining of my $100 million deal.
I saw somebody talking about that on Twitter a couple days ago, and I thought, you know, that's a conspiracy theory I can get behind. Gruden comes out of the booth, gets this huge deal, 10-year deal, knows that the money's guaranteed, comes in, destroys the promising team, and then gets fired because he knows the Raiders would do something like that.
Little grudge held from days gone by when they shipped him to Tampa Bay. Oh, boy.
Can you imagine that? What is that, 10 year or more than that? When was the last time he coached the Raiders? 2002? I mean, geez.
It goes back there, but that'd be one hell of a grudge and one hell of a revenge game.
Seriously, talk about a slow burn. slow burn, geez. Le'Veon Bell is just driving fantasy owners nuts. I mean, will he? Won't he? Is he? Isn't he? Yes, he is. No, he isn't. You know, we heard, okay, it sounded like it was basically a given that he was going to show up during the week 7 bye. Nope. So now we hear, okay, he was going to show up possibly Monday of this week. Nope. Now we're hearing there's a chance that he waits until after the trade deadline on Tuesday to show up. Okay, I can possibly buy into that. I'm legitimately wondering at this point, and I, you know, it passed across my mind a few times in the past, but I'm leaning as this is being the likely scenario at this point. He does not play football in 2018. So anyway, where are you at? Do you think he returns in the next few days, the next week? Do we see him in a Steelers uniform? When does he dress?
Wow. I'm inclined to go with that whole wait till after the October 30th NFL trade deadline. That's just a feel at this point. You know, he's been so pot committed. He's already lost more money than most NFL running backs will make this year. So it's really no longer a true money thing. Granted, he wants that big payday down the road. But who's to say at some point Pittsburgh just doesn't, if they haven't already, completely move on. And this just doesn't toil away as it has for the rest of the year. He has no real reason to come back. And if he does, let's say he returns. Let's say he returns next week. That puts him on pace to play against the Baltimore Ravens. What type of shape is he in? Is the team just going to be willing to throw him out there? Will the offensive line block for him, or will they try and send him a message? Remember, they were calling him out when all of this nonsense began way back when. Is the coaching staff going to have a grudge? Do they want to run him into the ground during the remainder of the season? Do they want to just let him go inactive every week?
I don't see it going that direction. James Conner plays extremely well. I personally believe that when Bell returns to the field, it will be some type of committee. What is that split? I don't know. Probably early on, it might even be close to 50-50 until Bell shows that he's back into game shape. And then you would just like to believe that the talent wins out. Bell emerges as maybe like the 80-20 kind of guy in that ratio. But I just have a hard time believing there won't be hard feelings. I have a hard time believing.
Oh, yeah, there's hard feelings on both sides. Hey, if you can squash that right now, there's hard feelings on both sides. You don't go through this.
Yes and no. I mean, business is business. These guys are professionals. They understand. And once he's in the building, you know what I mean, though? Winning cures all ills, right? So if he comes back in and they start winning football games consistently, that will be quickly forgiven and forgotten as far as I'm concerned.
But they're not losing because of the running back position.
No, I'm not saying they are. I'm not saying they are. But he adds such a different dynamic. Connor has been really, really good. But Bell adds such a dynamic change to any offense. That Pittsburgh goes from being a team that you can see them dropping almost any game. Realistically, even against Cleveland, you're like, hey, they tied the last time. I wouldn't be totally shocked if the Browns actually won this time. I don't think they will, but that enters your mind. When Le'Veon Bell's on the field, that really doesn't come into play very often. At least it doesn't for me. I don't start looking at these matchups going, these average teams are going to have or subpar teams are going to have a legitimate chance at knocking off the Steelers. So from their on-the-field perspective, they are nothing but better by having him on the field, of course. So anyway, we could go down that rabbit hole forever.
I'm going to want to break the numbers down on this, too, and see exactly how well Pittsburgh has done score-wise on an average score with Bell in the lineup versus Bell not being in the lineup. Because every time he's missed a game, going back the last couple of years, even D'Angelo Williams was a flipping stud when he was on the field. Connor has played very well. So if Bell does come back, I hope Pittsburgh sticks it to him and just gives Connor every goal line touch the rest of the way. Be fitting.
I don't think Bell cares, though. I really don't. I don't think he cares one bit. He just simply wants to survive the rest of 2018 to get into 2019 healthy with the idea that he can get this monstrous payday that I personally don't think anyone is going to pay.
That's going to be comical.
I really don't. I don't think anyone will pay him what
somebody else's top dollar will be less than what Pittsburgh offered him. That would be beautiful.
It very well could happen, but I personally think somebody will give him a little bit more, but it's not going to be that drastic jump that from what they offer to what he wanted.
We'll see. Unfortunately, as you said, slow burn.
Bilal Powell, the New York Jets' third down change of pace back, suffered a second neck injury. Definitely is going to be ending for his 2018 season. The timing, obviously unfortunate for Powell, couldn't be much better for Elijah McGuire. He's set to come off of the injured reserve list next week. He's capable of contributing in PPR leagues. He flashed. There was a legitimate argument before he got hurt that he could have outright taken that job from the start and played that role over Powell. Are you recommending him as an opportunity for an RB hungry owner to get in and have someone who can fill a spot for them right away?
Would you have to be? Anybody that has a pulse that might have the opportunity has to be given consideration. McGuire, as you noted, has shown some flashes. Let's be real. Crowell's played very well so far this year. It's going to remain a committee approach. This is still a rather bad Jets team. They're going to get the running game knocked out at times, which plays actually better to McGuire's talents long term. So depth purposes, yeah, tuck him away, stash him as a RB4, RB5, and see what happens. You're not going to want to spend a lot on him in your fab, but bring him in if you need a running back.
Another team that has been disastrous for running backs, Leonard Fournette is at this point maybe coming back in week 10, and even then, he'll have to deal with Carlos Hyde now after the trade from Cleveland. Offensive line woes probably are the biggest problem here, in my opinion. They're down to their third string left tackle, right tackle problems, left guard problems. They've had interior line issues with push. Consistency hasn't been there. I mean, is there reason to believe that that will turn around? Not even specific for Fournette. We've addressed Fournette a number of times. I don't think anything's really changed, even with the addition of Carlos Hyde. I don't know that anything's really drastically changed for Leonard Fournette from a fantasy perspective. The whole thing for the last, month and a half has been, when will I get him back? And if I get him back, can I keep him back? And if I can keep him back, can I trust him to stay back? Right? So all of that stuff is still there without Carlos Hyde even being a factor. Now you just have that extra layer of what will the carry split look like? And you have to think this speaks volumes of what the coaching staff in the front office believes as far as the ability to stay on the field for Leonard Fournette. So maybe the better overall way of looking at this is a terrible offensive line, a timeshare situation. Is there a value there for Carlos Hyde at this point? I think he probably took the biggest nosedive of any possible trade scenario of just about any team he could have gone to.
That's if Fournette comes back. Dum, dum, dum.
Okay, I guess maybe that's a fair point. At this point, am I assuming too much that they've kept him out extended time with the idea that by doing that, he will be ready to come back in week 10? Am I drinking the Kool-Aid there and that's not realistic?
At this point, with the soft body tissue problems that he's had, I don't think you can depend on anything. Even if he comes back, he aggravates the injury. We're right back where we started. He goes on injured reserve, something of that type. You know, they didn't bring in Hyde and give up future draft capital because they're comfortable with where Fournette's going to be in a week, 2 weeks, or a month. That's the reality of this. Because Yeldon has filled in admirably well as a be-all, do-all running back for them. He's not Fournette. Hyde's not Fournette. But even if you start thinking, okay, let's say Fournette's back and, what's the committee split going to be? That kills Fournette's value if that ends up being where it's at. This is a bell cow back. He needs 20-plus touches a game. You can't start sprinkling him with 10 and 14 carries and hope he's pushing it. That's not going to work. That's not his game.
I'd make the same argument, though, with Hyde. Hyde isn't the most electric running back. He needs a little bit of work to get going.
Yeah, he's a volume guy, too. And that's why I'm saying that this is almost a direct apple-to-apple replacement insurance policy.
I'm personally leaning that this has more to do with Blake Bortles' struggles than it does anything with Leonard Fournette's long-term being the rest of the season, you know, health concerns. I would think that being Doug Marone's being the smash mouth kind of guy that he is and Tom Coughlin coming from that same world, they're far more concerned about getting the ball out of Blake Bortles' hands, running it. I mean, if they can run 70 offensive plays and 40 plus of them are runs, I think they would be jumping for joy.
I think they'd like it to be more like 50-55 run plays if they really had their way. In an ideal world, sure, but
let's be realistic. I mean, that the chance of that happening more than once the rest of the year is probably extremely slim, especially the way the defense has been playing.
But a good running game would help the defense, too.
Of course
it would. The offense can't keep any sustained drives. A lot of this is a throw a pie chart on the wall right now. And now Bortles is a big slice of it. The lack of a running game is a big slice of it. The offensive line issues is a big slice of it. The defense is a big slice of it. And it's all intertwined. If you can fix the running game, if you can control time of possession, if you can keep the chains moving, if you can put Bortles in a situation where he's not forced to win games for you week after week, everything starts to get better, and everything starts to get better fast. This team has too much individual talent to believe that this mediocrity will continue.
Yeah, but it all starts up front with that offensive line, and I truly believe that as far as both pass protection, run blocking, and it's really hard to put it all on Blake Bortles when he's running for his life every single play. And the interesting element to me of all this, you mentioned the individual talent. This is, if I remember right, back at the 53-man roster cut, this was the fifth youngest team in football. They have a great season in 2017. They face some adversity in 2018, and they look like they're on the verge of implosion. How much of that is because of a lack of proven veteran leadership? That's something you really can't measure, but when you have a team that is that young, it has to at least be part of the equation.
That's where the coaching staff has to step up. That's where Coughlin has to come in as the overarching godfather of the Jaguars. And fair. Put them in the right direction.
That's fair. I just have to talk about this for a second because I couldn't stop laughing when I saw it. So when Terrence Newman retired from the Minnesota Vikings, they jumped 15 places overnight in terms of average age of the roster.
Ouch.
That's pretty impressive. 15 spots for one player. Makes you think the Patriots would do something similar, the day Tom Brady hangs it up. But they're pretty old across the board anyway, so
they'll start showing up for daycare when Tom hangs it up.
Sure. Another team that's on the other end of that age thing here. So Detroit, the Lions are on the other end of the age thing, and Seattle's on the younger end of the age thing. None of that really should matter too much, but where we're going here is the Seahawks come off their bye week to face a Lions team that showed they had a running game last week, which was really interesting. But the passing game hasn't been there. Matthew Stafford's been good since that week one debacle, but it hasn't been good from a fantasy perspective. He hasn't been somebody you can put in a lineup and move on to the next position and be confident that Stafford's going to give you a big day. You can make that argument. He probably hasn't been that guy in a number of years, but he's always been right on the fringe of solid QB1 set and forget territory, at least. So now you're looking at a defense where Seattle is the third best in the last 4 weeks against wide receivers. I don't know that I can say that they're the real deal because they faced Dallas, Arizona, and Oakland in that time. Hard to get too excited about any of those passing attacks. Overall, though, season long, they've been pretty good against receivers. Are we at the point now, with all of that in mind, in combination with how well Detroit's been running the ball, that the receiving game, the perception of Detroit's a pass-happy, plug in any of those top three receivers and you're okay type of offense, is that more myth than reality at this point?
Well, first on Seattle's defense, throw in Chicago and Denver as those first games of the season too, and you have the perfect storm for padded statistics paperwork-wise. There has been just this perfect, perfect situation where every team week after week has just had a horrible passing game, a horrible receiver output. Confident the lack of production by the opposing wide receivers is dictating the number. This isn't Legion of Boom 2.0. Bank on that. Detroit wideouts will be fine this week. And I say will be fine in comparison to what we've seen so far. In PPR leagues, Golden Tate is still a weekly start. Kenny Golladay has become a weekly start as a wide receiver 3 or a flex. Marvin Jones, a little bit more roller coaster ride so far this year. In a matchup like this, I think you have to look at him as at least a flex play. Besides, we're still dealing with bye weeks. So I don't think any of those three wide receivers are out of the equation. And I totally removed this whole paper padded number of what Seattle's defensive team against is for wide receivers against.
Now, do you think this is the beginning of an offensive transition in general, though, matchup aside, for the Lions?
For the Lions? Well, they've been saying for a long time they want to run the football. The
proof has
never been. Well, yeah, the proof has never been in the pudding. Kerryon Johnson looked fantastic a week ago. Just
he has
fantastic.
All season. Hey, aside from his rookie game, he's averaging more than 5.4 yards per carry in every single game.
I would love to see them get LeGarrette Blount out of that equation because I think Kerryon Johnson could handle that role. Obviously, Theo Riddick didn't play last week. That helped bolster the numbers a little bit. When you start slicing the pie by three running backs, it never helps.
Yeah, but Riddick doesn't run the ball. He catches four or five balls tops right now. He's almost borderline irrelevant in fantasy even when he's on the field.
So, but Johnson is showing that he could be the bell cow. He could be an every down back for them. We've seen
and
that type
be.
Of talent out of him. Yeah, but no question. Does that mean that now all of a sudden we've flipped on our heads and Detroit is not a passing team. Detroit is a running team. No, they're going to be a more balanced team. And I think having Patricia come over from New England, much like New England does on a week-to-week basis, they're going to cater their offense a little bit more towards what the defense allows. Look at New England. They've done it forever. One week they can be a power run team. The next week they can run nine times. So can Jim Bob Cooter take that system and make it work in Detroit? Yeah, you know, Stafford is no Tom Brady. At the beginning of the season, when I said the Lions were a playoff-bound team, you started to laugh at me. I said, nah, you know, they have the talent. They just needed the coaching staff. We're starting to see that now. They've got a long way to go, mind you, a long, long way to go. And riding Kerryon Johnson would be a big part of that. But this team is headed up.
I'll take your word for it. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I'd like to
confidence,
see them.
Confidence, Corey. I'd have like confidence to see
them,
they can do it.
I'd like to see them beat up on somebody other than, you know, the Miami Dolphins of the world. But they beat up on a pretty rough-looking Patriots. The Brock
Osweiler-led Miami Dolphins.
Pretty rough-looking Patriots team a few weeks back, too. So it's let's see what they can do against quality opponents consistently. The NFL trade deadline, we touched on that. It comes this upcoming Tuesday, October 30th. We've already seen a few trades, and there are a few names yet to come. Some of the guys that maybe jump off to me right away as possible trade options. Le'Veon Bell's the top name. As I've said, I don't think he goes anywhere. You see a lot of chatter about the Denver Broncos receivers possibly going, especially Emmanuel Sanders. I'd be pretty surprised as long as Denver feels they're comfortably in the playoff hunt. I don't think they're going to go that route. They still have another year with him under contract and could look to move him at a later date. LeSean McCoy's name has been tossed out there. It would be smart for them to trade him. I don't know that Buffalo actually does that. But some sneakier names to me. What do you think about the possibility of RG3 to Jacksonville? What do you think about the possibility of Tyrod Taylor back to Buffalo? Or possibly to Jacksonville? Amir Abdullah is an interesting name there, kind of toiling away in Detroit. And then you've seen Devontae Parker's name thrown around. There's word that they want a third-round pick for him. I think that's probably excessive. Is there anyone else that you're looking at who could be maybe a trade option that's probably not quite on the radar?
Would Devontae Parker give a third-round pick for Devontae Parker at this point? Yeah, no, probably not. You named a bunch of the names that I've considered. I'll throw two others at you. Nick Foles, I think that the opportunity is right for Philadelphia to flip him into some valuable opportunity right now, especially with the way some of the quarterback situations have played out in the NFL. Do I believe in Foles? No, I do not. But I think there's always a sucker team out there that may just dive in. Sticking up in Buffalo, too. Kelvin Benjamin, if this guy just wore out his welcome in Carolina. He's done it ultra quick in Buffalo. Still a lot of talent, but is there a wide receiver needy team out there that's willing to deal with them?
Jacoby Brissett's another name that I've thought a little bit about. If they're comfortable with Andrew Luck at this point, hard not to be considering how he's been playing. Obviously, at any moment, he could take a bad shot and hurt that shoulder again, so it depends on how they view that playing out. Wouldn't be a terrible surprise. And in some bizarre universe, if Eli Manning was playing any better than he is, I wouldn't think it was a crazy scenario if he got traded, but I personally still think he's going to find the bench sooner than later. So
I think Odell Beckham's out there working the lines right now, seeing which team would take Eli Manning, and he'll bring it to the Giants and try and make the offer. He'll work as the agent for Manning. Huh.
So we always look at some situations, specific players with interesting matchups, guys who are right on the edge of being playable. Michael Roberts, the tight end for the Lions, had two touchdowns last week, and he had a touchdown in his previous game. He caught 16 touchdowns in his last year at Toledo. He was a former basketball player. A little bit of that Antonio Gates flavor going on there. Detroit doesn't have a tight end. As we talked about the Seattle matchup on the receivers, are you brave enough to put your neck out on the line for Michael Roberts at tight end?
A little bit of Antonio Gates flavor. What are we talking here? Like one millionth?
Yeah, like today's Antonio Gates. Yeah, maybe it takes him 4 minutes to get past the line of scrimmage.
So he's a sit for me at this point. Need to see more. Seattle hasn't given up a touchdown to the position in the last month.
Yeah, fair. They haven't played the greatest teams as we discussed, but if they concentrate on all of those receivers and Kerryon Johnson, I would say there's probably a 30% chance Robert scores a touchdown. I wouldn't expect anything else out of him. Most likely for any situation, he's probably a fantasy sit this week. Carson Wentz overseas in London against Jacksonville, where the Jaguars have played extremely well in the last three trips.
I lean towards sitting him purely because I don't see him as a top 12 quarterback option this week. More so, other matchups are just more exciting. If you're in a two quarterback league, super flex, something of that ilk, he's in conversation. I think I have him ranked about 16th overall this week.
I think you play him out of desperation at the lowest end of the QB1 tier. I'm thinking somewhere around 250 and 2 is reasonable. I wouldn't be terribly shocked if it's an ugly performance to get there, but 250 and 2 is reasonable to me. Marlon Mack coming off a monster game, and he looked pretty good the week before. Now he is the Oakland Raiders. I think this is a guy that you can't possibly get away from right now.
Yeah, ride the hot hand. The Raiders have given up 5 touchdowns to running backs in the last month. Keep him going. Mack will get lots of touches this week again.
On the other side of that matchup coin, we have Doug Martin taking over from Marshawn Lynch as the lead back in Oakland. He'll probably be spelled a little bit by Jalen Richard. We have the Indianapolis Colts, obviously, as the other side of that matchup. Are you playing Doug Martin?
No, I don't think I'm owning Martin. We saw nothing in Tampa the last 2 years. Lynch was serviceable in Oakland. The team has gotten worse now that he's on IR. I just can't buy into Martin. I just can't.
I don't want to. I could understand it if somebody was willing to try it, if they were desperate, they needed a running back. Looking at some of the backs on bye this week, I can see it.
Yeah, the matchup is okay, but we can't even depend that Martin's truly going to see 10 touches.
To me, it's just simply the opportunity for a touchdown. That would be the only reason why I would feel comfortable in any sense, very lukewarm sense of comfortability there, in playing him as a flex guy. A little bit better option in standard than in PPR. And Geronimo Allison comes back from the bye week. He had the concussion problems before the bye. Goes against the Los Angeles Rams. I'm saying play him all day long. If Green Bay has any shot in this game, they're going to have to sling the ball up and down the field, and the Rams have shown that they can be beaten through the air.
Wow, you and I agree. Yeah, let's go with a minimum flex option.
How about Randall Cobb then, while we're talking about basically the same situation?
Yeah, as long as he's active on Sunday, minimum flex position.
I guess so. I like him less than I like Allison. I think Allison's actually a wiser play, especially because of the matchup itself on the outside. But I can't argue the Cobb situation if you have to go that way. A couple of guys I'm interested in otherwise we didn't touch on. Cortland Sutton against Kansas City. The Chiefs have been better against receivers, and we saw that last week. I mean, A.J. Green was pretty good because he was force-fed. That seems to be how it works with him. Overall, though, they've been pretty good against receivers. I think that just because Sutton can get lost in the mix, he's going to be a low-volume guy. The hope here is he gets into the end zone. Kansas City's probably going to hang 30-plus points on Denver, and Denver's going to have to throw the football. C.J. Uzomah against Cincinnati's tight end. Interesting situation there. Great matchup against Tampa Bay. Probably the best matchup anyone could hope for if you have to be in the world of considering C.J. Uzomah. But he's played pretty well. I mean, he got into the end zone last week, which salvaged any fantasy value he could have had. He was pretty good target yardage catch-wise the week before. And then Kenyon Barner. I don't think we see Sony Michel this week. Kenyon Barner would be the most likely between the 20s guy for New England. James White will be sprinkled in. They may just outright abandon the run and use that short passing game as an extension of the run. We've seen them do that a number of times in the past. Against Buffalo, though, I think there's an outside chance he can sneak into the end zone. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he posts right around that low-end RB2 to quality flex play final results.
I'm going to pick on the Arizona defense again here. Raheem Mostert. It looks like he's going to see a lot of touches one more time. Cardinals have given up over 500 combined yards and 4 touchdowns to the position in the last 3 weeks. Wow. Going back to that Indy-Oakland game, also like Nyheim Hines, not seeing as many touches with Marlon Mack back, but the guy's still out there. He's still catching some passes. Again, this is a defense that's being eaten alive by running backs. I think Hines could be one of those sneaky touchdown makers this weekend. David Moore, Seattle versus Detroit. Lions secondary still as atrocious as ever. 4 touchdowns to the position in the last 2 games. Moore's got 3 of his own in that same time period. Just 5 catches, though. This is a reach, but desperate times call for desperate measures. Going New York versus Chicago, Jermaine Kearse. Injuries at running back and receiver for the Jets. Kearse is a big body. He's not that far removed from a double-digit target game. Needs to be a factor against the Bears. His size makes him one.
I can't argue with that. I actually like Kearse a little bit. I was considering him as a waiver pickup in the league, and I just wasn't brave enough to pull the trigger to drop anybody I had on my team that I felt was better for the long range. So what are we doing here at the huddle this week, Ryan?
Preparing you for another week of dominance, Corey. Sleepers, free agent pickups, weekly projections for all of the noteworthy players and anyone that will touch the football. Catered to your scoring system. Head over to thehuddle.com. Use the code podcast18, that's podcast18, for an extra $10 off our already discounted in-season product, and you can be headed towards a championship yourself.
Excellent. Next week, we're going to have a special treat for you. We will talk DFS heavy. We're going to look at setting optimal lineups in both FanDuel, DraftKings, and even RT Sports' format. So be sure to check that out if you're into the daily fantasy sports scene. Wishing you good luck for Week 8 from Ryan Benigni. I'm Corey Benigni. We'll talk to you soon.